Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump and his wife are in Britain following the NATO summit in Brussels. Later today, they go to Prime Minister Theresa May's country home near Oxford. Then later in the day, they'll have tea with Queen Elizabeth at Windsor Castle. More now from AP's Charles Dellas in London.
Trump and his wife Melania are not expected to make waves during the visit with the 92-year-old monarch. Elizabeth has met every American president since Dwight Eisenhower, with the exception of Lyndon Johnson, who never visited Britain while in office. Advice will be freely available on the rules of etiquette for encounters with the Queen, such as don't get too affectionate. The monarch doesn't expect to be hugged or kissed by guests. In a meeting like this, etiquette requires Trump to wait until the Queen offers her hand, then to shake it politely and move on. But the President nor the First Lady will need to bow or curtsy when they meet Elizabeth. That's not required for a head of state. Charles de Ledesma, London.
On Monday, President Trump will be holding a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. President Trump says he's received a very nice note from North Korean leader Kim Jong-un that praises the efforts by Mr. Trump to improve relations between the two countries and implement a joint statement signed by the leaders at their Singapore summit in June. This follows U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's meeting last week in Pyongyang regarding the North's nuclear program, where afterwards Korean state media described the talks with Pompeo as regrettable. An explosion rocked a chemical factory in Cairo's airport late Thursday, prompting firefighters, ambulances to rush to the scene. Local media reported several injuries, but no deaths were reported. This is VOA News. Syrian government has raised the national flag over areas of Deraa city that have been in rebel hands for years. It is being seen as a major victory for President Bashar al-Assad in the birthplace of the revolt against his rule. Meantime, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu meeting in Moscow this week with Russian President Vladimir Putin for talks believed to have focused on Iran's presence in Syria. Trinity University scholar David Lesh says it's only natural for Israel to forge closer ties with Russia on this issue.
And so Russia is being acknowledged clearly as the main power broker in Syria. Is the go-to country in terms of trying to settle this down. And Russia is playing the role the U.S. used to play, actually, in the region, in that it has relationships with parties to the conflict or potential conflict, in this case, the Syrian government, Iran, and Israel.
Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Moscow coincided with the downing of a Syrian drone after entering Israeli airspace. Israel responded with strikes against three Syrian positions. Embattled U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation official Peter Strzok has appeared before Congress, rejecting Republican criticisms that a series of text messages he exchanged with FBI lawyer Lisa Page during the 2016 presidential campaign were evidence of bias against President Trump. AP's Ed Donahue reporting.
Strzok was involved in investigations involving Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Here you are before you've interviewed a single solitary witness saying F Trump.
Oversight Committee Chair Trey Gowdy says the text went into the start of the Russia investigation.
Do you remember how long it took for you to start talking about impeachment after Bob Mueller was appointed?
I don't, sir.
One day.
Peter Strzok says his views don't reflect his work.
At no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took.
And he says the fact that he could get away with what the GOP alleges
deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
Strzok says the Russia investigation is not a witch hunt. It is not a hoax. Ed Donahue, Washington.
UN Security Council set to vote today on a resolution that would impose an arms embargo on South Sudan and sanctions against the current deputy defense chief and former army chief. U.S.-sponsored resolution reportedly expresses concern at the failure of South Sudan's leaders to end hostilities. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, July the 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. South Sudan's parliament has approved extending President Salva Kiir's term until 2021, a move that has angered the armed opposition as peace talks continue in this five-year civil conflict. In Zimbabwe, questions still linger as to whether police in the city of Bulawayo cast their votes yesterday ahead of the July 30 elections. The opposition is accusing the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of lacking transparency in the process.
No, we're not told. What led us to go there with the pictures on social media? Which means maybe one of the police might have leaked the information. If it was not for that social media, that process was going to go and check.
Mlando Nkube is a councillor in Bulawayo. It belongs to the opposition MDC party. And in Uganda, the Information Communication and Technology Association, an umbrella of ICT private sector companies and professionals, has welcomed President Yoweri Museveni's proposal to amend the controversial mobile money tax.
The 1% mobile money tax was a result of a miscommunication. And then today he admitted that it was a mistake, but he had actually signed the law.
Albert Muchunguzi is the head of the ICT Association of Uganda. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. In South Sudan, the country's parliament has approved extending President Salva Kiir's term until 2021. The move has angered the armed opposition as peace talks continue to end the five-year civil war. Lawmaker Atem Garang says that the president is expected to sign the extension by the end of this week. Elections in South Sudan have been delayed amid the fighting that has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions of others. Opposition spokesperson Mabior Garang told the Associated Press that the move by the parliament was regrettable as it shows that the regime is playing games at the negotiating table. Mabior called on the international community not to recognize the president's extended term. The extension comes days after South Sudan's government said that the warring sides had agreed to reinstate opposition leader Riek Machar as first vice president. They're still waiting for the final peace deal to be signed. The Information, Communication and Technology Association in Uganda, an umbrella of ICT private sector companies and professionals, has welcomed President Yoweri Museveni's proposal to amend the mobile money tax. The association is asking the government to remove both the mobile money and social media taxes. The taxes went into effect earlier this month. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
Albert Muchunguzi, who heads the ICT Association of Uganda, or ICTAU, says the association is gravely concerned about the recently implemented taxes on mobile money transactions and over-the-top or OTT services. Muchunguzi says taxes were introduced by the government without sufficient deliberations or consultations of the population and ICT experts. He says the taxes will constrain the development of ICT industry, economy, and the society.
Taxing mobile money or mobile money becoming unnecessarily expensive means it's no longer going to be a preferred method of payment by users, and therefore it's not going to be a popular method of payment by merchants or receiving payments by merchants. And that's an issue. So it's again, hindering progress, hindering development.
President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni this Thursday directed that all those people whose mobile money tax deductions had been made on the basis of 1% be refunded, and admitted that the introduction of 1% tax on mobile money transfer was a mistake. Muchunguzi is pessimistic the president's directives posted on his social media accounts will be implemented.
Last week he said that the 1% mobile money tax was a result of a miscommunication. And then today he admitted that it was a mistake, but he had actually signed the law and it was law. So to be able to undo the law, you have to go back through the same process with parliament. Sometimes it can take a short time, sometimes it can take a long time, depending on the motivations. The point being that I'm saying I'm taking his blogs or his communications, his articles with skepticism.
Muchungu says the tax on social media will in fact increase abject poverty among Ugandans, widen the digital divide, and limit public access to information. Prudence Kemishana, a gender activist and a blogger, agrees. She says the government ought to actually first improve the ICT sector before even proposing levying taxes on it in the first place.
Internet and speeds in Uganda slow. Two, internet is expensive. Three, the connectivity is still very low. Remember, in the past, the banks were not accessible for many. Many people are keeping money in their pillows. And now some the technologists go and do their hard work. And guess who is spoiling the party? Our government. So this discussion of we've removed 0.5% on the taxes should just stop. This whole tax should go.
Since the beginning of this month, social media users have had to part with 200 Uganda shillings or about 0.5 cents so as to access internet. Equally, mobile money users have also had to be charged 1% on all transactions they make. The Ugandan parliament will sit next week to discuss whether to repeal or not repeal the new taxes. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And in Kampala, after skirmishes between protesters and police yesterday, residents say that the government should remove these two taxes, that is the mobile money tax and the social media tax. They say that both taxes are making business transactions difficult and depriving them of the right to communicate with their families. Mugume hit the streets of Kampala and he has a sampling of their voices.
My name is Sachirija Patrick, a retailer in downtown Kampala, and I use mobile money for most of my transactions. Mobile money tax has affected me and my business in such a way that some of my customers pay me through mobile money. So when they pay me through mobile money, this tax has really put my business at a risk of collapsing, because when I go to withdraw this money off my mobile, I'm deducted a huge amount of money. So this means my profits are going down and my sales are also affected in this kind of way. They're affected negatively.
The social media tax is completely unfair. And when you look at this tax, 200 shillings, meaning per week, you can go for 1,600 Ugandan money. When you calculate this per month and per year, that's lots of money. It's not bad to pay tax, but the timing of the tax is really, really bad. The economy is not doing well, and majority of people in the country have been using social media to express their views. Now, that means that the social media tax has come as an infringement on freedom of expression. So we kindly ask the government to reverse their action and look through this, really.
My name is Mwang Innocent. I'm a businessman based in Kampala, Uganda. Mobile money has been the easiest platform and convenient platform on which my clients have been able to pay me. My clients have deducted the amount they can pay me just because they have to cater for the other percentage that is charged by government. Secondly, my business is not flowing so fast just because I have no financial inclusive platform that people can reach me when it comes to payments. So I deliver my services, but somebody cannot make payment. I cannot send my family members or relatives who are far away from where I am, more so in remote areas, just because they now to access mobile money, it costs them more than what it used to previously. Even the people who, the mobile money agents, are getting out of business.
Kampala residents speaking on the new taxes that took effect earlier this month, the taxes on social media and the tax on mobile money transfers in the country. From Uganda, we go to Zimbabwe, where the Electoral Commission of the country, that's the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, has dismissed reports that hundreds of Zimbabwean police cast their special votes in the country's second largest city of Bulawayo on Thursday. The opposition parties ordered the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to stop the process, saying that it violates national laws. However, according to Senior Assistant Police Commissioner Charity Charamba, the postal voting was conducted in the Cedars Rose camp as per some provisions of Zimbabwe's Electoral Act. However, this assertion is being contradicted by Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission's acting chief elections officer, Utloile Sligwana. He says that the electoral body is still processing postal vote applications and dismissed the claim of police voting as malicious and as meant to cause alarm and despondency. And as questions still remain unanswered as to whether the voting happened or not, VOA's Zimbabwe service reporter Gibbs Dube spoke to Charity Charamba, senior police assistant commissioner, who tells him that the postal voting was actually conducted lawfully.
Yes, there are police who are voting who are using the postal vote, which is provided for under the Electoral Act, Section 72, Chapter 2.13, which entitles those, especially those from the disciplined forces, who will be on duty during the voting day to vote prior to the election. This is done because some of the police officers are going to be deployed at polling stations, which are very far away from their polling stations. As a result, every person has got a right to vote, and your vote is your right. Police officers are human beings who are also entitled to vote. But because they will be deployed, this is why they are exercising their right through this postal vote.
How many police officers are we talking about here?
Offhand, I cannot tell. Offhand, I cannot tell.
Yes, and there are reports that these policemen and women that are voting are doing so on their own without the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission officers. How far true can that be?
That is the information that you got there, but that information needs to be verified because there are election observers there who are right there in the officer commanding province for Bulawayo, where this complaint has emanated from. Is on the ground with election observers as well as journalists who are there. They are also going to cover a brief from him to inform the people what is actually transpiring on the ground. We also intend to publish that video so that people can see how those people have been voting.
There are also reports that the police are being forced to cast votes for ZANU-PF. That is the presidential candidate, President Emmerson Mnangagwa. What's your comment on that?
My comment on that is that is very false. Himself, the president, Comrade Edi Mnangagwa, has made it very, very clear, categorically clear, that nobody is going to be forced to vote. He has been preaching peace, and I don't see how, at this stage, he can only force police officers to vote for him, when he is saying to other people that they are free to vote for any other party. Nobody is being forced to vote. And if at all there was anybody who was forced to vote, those people are not telling the truth because they are observers who have been observing. In any case, if you are forced to vote, you have the right to say, I don't want to vote. But from what we got from the officer commanding who is on the ground, there are a few people who want to I don't know how to say it, but there are people who are not honest, who want to cause despondency and tell falsehoods. The process is very clear. Nobody is being forced to vote. And if you don't want to vote, it is also, and there is also nobody who is near the people who are voting. And this is what I have been informed by the people on the ground. However, for you to believe this, an interview is ongoing in Bulawayo, where the head of the province is being interviewed, talking to journalists as well as observers. Those people will be able to give a clear assessment of what they have perceived themselves and what they have actually seen on the ground.
And lastly, when are the other police officers voting?
I'll check on that. Remember, I'm a police spokesperson, and I'm not always available to see when the others will be voting, but I can get that information.
That was Charity Charamba, Senior Police Assistant Commissioner. She was speaking with VOA's Gibbs Dube from Harare. And the local councillor Mlandu Nkube of the opposition MDC party accuses the Electoral Commission of having been caught red-handed trying to rig elections in favour of the ruling ZANU-PF party.
What happened after we saw pictures flooding the social media that the police officers are voting at Rose Camp? We then say it as the candidate, because as I can tell you, I know there are voters who voted in Ward 1. So as a candidate in Ward 1, I should see what is happening. We then went there, and then when we arrived there, we discovered that there were more ballot paper than the number of the people who are queuing outside. Then what was happening is that the police officer was being given a ballot. When you are given a ballot, you are then asked to vote, and then actually what was happening, they were voting in front of their bosses. And you're not allowed to close the envelope. The boss will remain closing the envelope. Who knows what is this? So we then managed to talk to those superiors. Shockingly, there was no ZEC officer in that election. And they were using cardboard boxes as ballot boxes. And when we started to discuss with them, luckily, the EU observers and the Upper Cook observers got the wind. They came in. And the journalist started to arrive. When the journalist started to arrive, the police ordered the guy who was standing by the door to close the door. So when the door was closed, those officers that were asked to vote, they started to go back to their places. But I can tell you, they were showing happy faces, that they are happy that someone is trying to fight, that they vote freely. So,
but were you told as an opposition party to actually attend the voting process?
No, we're not told. What made us to go there were the pictures on social media, which means maybe one of the police might have leaked the information. If it was not for that social media, that process was going to go unchecked.
And the police, you are saying they were very happy when you intervened?
They were very, very happy. I can tell you they were smiling, looking at us while they were going down. They were very happy.
And did you stop the whole process?
What happened when we started to discuss? The inspector, I think it's Moyo or someone, he went outside, started to phone. I think he was phoning his bosses in Harar, which he then said, no. Then he came and said, no, let's stop the process. Because already there was no one to vote. It was the so-called voters had already gone, which was a clear sign that these people were forced to come and queue to vote. But when someone had come to defend them, they went, a sign that they were not prepared to come and vote.
So where did they get the ballot papers from?
That's our question. Because when we approached ZEC in our offices, they said they are not aware of such an election. Because obviously, when it's a ZEC election, there should be a ZEC, a ballot box, which is written ZEC. There should be a ZEC officer. There should be, you know, wherever we go. You see those ballot booths, they'll be written ZEC and something. But there was no sign that shows that there's ZEC.
Mlandu Nkube belongs to the opposition MDC party. He was speaking to VOA's Zimbabwe service reporter, Gibbs Dube. Transparency International says that corruption continues to affect the African continent by hampering the ability of its citizens to engage in activity, development, and the ability of governments to fight poverty. The continent ranks lowest amongst global regions in the Corruption Perception Index, CPI. 6 out of the bottom 10 countries are African. And this week, Kenyans marked the African Anti-Corruption Day. The country ranked 143 out of 180 most corrupt countries. And as Maureen Ojambo reports from Kenya, Kenyans feel that the fight against corruption in their country is not bearing fruits.
To be honest, Kenya does not have a stand in the fight against corruption.
Our government and what is happening currently in terms of corruption, I feel like we are over 100%, like we are at the highest peak that we can get. It can get worse than this.
I think the state of corruption in Kenya, we need to sell this country so that we can be able to afford it.
That is the perception of most Kenyans as far as corruption is concerned. According to them, corruption has been rampant in the country in the recent past as most of them blame the government for the high rate of graft. Speaking while marking the African Anti-Corruption Day in Kenya, Managing Director Transparency International Samuel Kimeu says that there is need for the government to put up measures to fight corruption in Kenya. Kimeu says high rate of corruption in Kenya is due to poor political strategies.
Politics, for the longest time ever, driven corruption. And there is a deep symbiotic relationship between our politics and corruption. What that means is that when leaders are pursuing, political power, a lot of them do so by using resources that are illicitly acquired or by getting support from shadowy characters who want to loot the state. And they invest in the political enterprises of our leaders in the hope that they can reap the benefits after. We have a deep problem with our accountability measures for fight against corruption.
For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
And now for some sports updates with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jackson, and welcome to the latest update from the 2018 FIFA World Cup here in Russia. The Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow will host the final of the 2018 FIFA World Cup on Sunday. Russia's sporting mecca has previously hosted the 1980 Olympics, the 1999 UEFA Cup final, and the 2008 Champions League final. This year's final will be between France and Croatia. France has won 8 of their last 10 competitive matches, while the Croats, who are appearing in their first World Cup final, had to go to extra time in all of their 3 knockout matches at this year's 2018 World Cup. Many sports analysts have observed that tiredness could come into play against France, who have made the final without reaching their considerable potential. Before the final on Sunday, however, at the St. Petersburg Stadium, it will be Belgium who will take on England in the bronze match. England have suffered 1 defeat during regulation time in their last 16 matches, and it might interest you to know that none of the World Cup third place playoffs have gone to extra time since 1986, but Belgium's clash with England could buck the trend. Belgium came out on top in the group stage when both teams sent out their reserves, but there were not too many clear chances for either side, and another closely contested match is on the cards in St. Petersburg on Saturday. FIFA's technical study group, consisting of a lineup of world-renowned football experts, which include Carlos Alberto Pereira, who is the head of the TSG, Marco van Basten, Bora Milutinovic, Emmanuel Amuneke, and Andy Roxburgh, have been given an assessment of the competition so far. The FIFA technical study group has been deeply involved in analyzing the matches of the 2018 FIFA World Cup and have been speaking on their findings so far. Carlos Alberto Pereira said all through these years there have been a lot of changes both on and off the pitch.
Through all this year, there was a lot of changes, a lot of transformations in and out of the game, in and out of the pitch. One thing did not change at all is the talent, is the quality, is the skill, is the passion for the game.
For his part, the former Nigerian international winger, Emmanuel Amuneke, said the 2018 World Cup was a disappointment for African teams because the expectations from them were much higher.
There was much expectations from African teams, and a lot of people were expecting African teams to progress beyond what they have done previously in the last World Cup, but unfortunately, it couldn't materialize. Well, the truth is that we all are aware that football has developed a lot, and football will continue to change. And we in Africa, if we don't embrace the responsibility and seeing how we can develop our youth, we'll continue to live on dreams. And the reality is that dreams without plan is just an illusion.
And that's the latest FIFA World Cup update from Moscow. I am Samson O'Malley. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have yourself a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English Africa Service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next on the program, U.S. President Donald Trump renews criticism of NATO, even as member states pledge to raise military spending and provide critical support for the erstwhile 29-nation alliance. We'll discuss the tone, substance, and outcome of the summit with two veteran NATO analysts. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.